Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one of a kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
You can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
For a manager who spent the last few months trying to kill all the hype around Troy Parrott, Mick McCarthy has put himself in a very interesting position by selecting the 17-year-old on the bench tonight. Think about it. Time runs out. Time will be running out. Ireland will almost certainly need a goal from somewhere. We'll most likely be level or even behind in a match that we have to win to qualify. Mick McCarthy will already have sprung, I'm going to say, Jack Byrne and Shawnee Maguire from the bench. And he'd be left with the choice between Troy Parrott and Big James Collins for the final 10 minutes. I know what you're both thinking, guys. The cautious nature that's been beaten into Mick's brain by a lifetime in football will probably persuade him to send on the big lad to win a couple of headers. But just at that moment, something flickers in the back of McCarthy's mind. It's that last bit of boyish enthusiasm for the game that he developed as a young lad in Yorkshire supporting the great Leeds team in the 1970s. He'll turn to the young man, young Troy Parrott, put an arm around his shoulder and say, "Troy, you know what to do." Parrott goes on up front, wins a knockdown from Shane Duffy, who's been pushed up front from about the hour mark, and chips it delicately over Casper Schmeichel to win the game and send us a Euro 2020. Welcome to Monday's Football Podcast. Hi, Ken Eimer.
Hello.
Hey, how are you? Wow. That was...
Are you all right?
That was
how was your weekend?
Yeah.
Did you have it?
Quite emotional, actually.
It's a relaxing weekend.
Just building.
Seems like you're
going
to lock it off your chest there. You know?
I want to feel excited because I keep reading how this is the biggest game in years in Irish football, and how it's a sellout and all these things. Well, it's not a sellout because I just went on the. Well, it wasn't
It's not a sellout in that you can still buy tickets for the event. But I mean that's an extraordinarily narrow view of what the term sellout
It's a sellout in terms of the spirit of the whole thing. The tickets that are on sale appear to be mostly, well, exclusively premium.
They're
level.
In the stadium, though.
So if they're in the stadium, it's not a sellout as far as I can say.
Meets the standard.
I'm also hearing how this is it's just the biggest game ever. We win this, we qualify for a major tournament, which is going to be in Dublin. We're talking about the finals. And yet, though, I haven't really sensed, like, I'm reading those things. I'm writing, seeing journalists write that. I'm seeing a bit of hype around, but I'm not actually getting the sense from the common man and woman in the street, Murph. I'm just not feeling it. I mean, we're within a stone's throw of Land's End Road.
How do you know? Do you walk around the street interrupting people? Excuse me.
What do you mind canvassing your views?
Well, I remember the morning after, maybe tomorrow morning is the time to have this conversation, because if we've qualified, I will be feeling it. Can you not feel it, as Steve Staunton once said? I will certainly be feeling it. I do remember after the game against Italy in the World Cup, for example, in the Euros, I should say, I did actually, you were overhearing people. Maybe it's just because you're very happy yourself. You're assuming everyone else is very happy too. So what I'm trying to do, Ken, is generate this feel-good factor. That's why I'm talking about Troy Parrott coming off the bench and winning the game and qualifying us for the Euros.
Okay.
Yeah, happy enough for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Got a scumbag here?
Yeah, go for it.
I've got a call here that says you're the most boring, predictable, condescending interviewer around. Go back to lecturing. You have the charisma of a sick bag. That's just it. I just mentioned, not you, no me. Okay, ain't nobody f***ing with my click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mom. We don't normally broadcast all the stuff that comes from scum around the country.
Ed from London, in many ways the original scumbag. Subject, handball and the look of the Irish. Dear Ian McDimwit.
Hey! The original McDimwit.
It is with enormous pleasure that I look. I think the original might have even been in letter form. Did I actually get a letter addressed?
No,
no, it was just an email.
Yeah, it was an email, and I just saw looking at the email that he actually spelled McDimwit with two T's at the end.
Classy.
Oh, clever. McDimwit. McDevitt is two T's.
Two T's, exactly. Yeah. So he, yeah.
Okay. Well, you're probably wondering what's going on here. This letter is dated Friday, 20th of November, 2009. Ken has dug it out of the archives while researching his Irish Times piece on the Happy Thierry Henry Day, by the way.
Looking at my emails.
Thierry Henry has controlled the ball basketball style.
So 10 years on. So here's the email from Ed from London. Dear Ian McDimwit, two T's. It is with enormous pleasure that I look forward to the FIFA World Cup finals next year in South Africa. Try as I might, it was impossible not to smile at the post-match comments from the ex-Ireland international Liam Brady relating to the alleged Thierry Henry handball. He told Sky News, I would ask Blatter to have a look at this. I'd ask the French Soccer Federation to have a look at this. I'd ask Thierry Henry to have a look at this and say, do you want to play the game again in Paris? We'll play in Paris. What was Brady thinking? That Sepp Blatter would wave a magic wand and schedule a rematch? Is Brady somehow travelling back and forth between reality and some parallel dimension? Having observed Brady's punditry, it would seem his latest outburst would confirm what I and most other rational people have long suspected.
Most other rational people.
Brady is suffering from some tragic early onset of senile dementia. Was it too many headers? Which is the too many headers thing, suddenly topical. The vaguest notion of any hint of a rematch is the fantasy of a child. Blah, 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 blah. The only fact is, personally, I thought that it was not a handball under the rules.
It was not a handball.
But even if it was, the referee did not see it or just decided not to give it. That is that. What sort of special treatment does Brady believe that the Irish international squad should be afforded? And so on and so on. In closing, I would like to offer my sympathies to the Irish supporters for the painful way in which they exited the road to the finals. But we all know that's football. Your show will seem even duller. Even duller now that the pointless expectant hope has evaporated from the World Cup bid. I will send you periodicals from South Africa next year as I follow the England's progress as they march towards
the
final.
They make their way to the
all the very warmest regards, Ed from London.
Bloemfontein Bludening. Bludgeoned by the Germans.
But this was all about Liam Brady.
I know.
Why was he calling you McDimwit?
It was just a passing reference. I thought I was going to get abused. Yeah. I think I got more than one bit of correspondence from Ed from London.
We had Brady on. Reed Brady on as well.
At that time.
Yeah. Brady obviously would usually never agree to speak. But on that occasion, he was, put me on.
That's tough to say. Well,
come on, when can we do it? Yeah. It's like, okay, hang on a second. We'll just
maybe this guy
fire
called
up the
you.
Desk.
Yeah, maybe this guy called you Ian McDimwit. We laughed about it, and I'm sure we did on air. And then others, maybe you got a letter addressed to Ian McDimwit after this email, which excoriated you.
Could have been.
And everything that you stand for.
It's still painful. Look, whatever happens tonight, we're going to have an Ireland-Denmark reaction pod tomorrow on the World Service. It will either be a joyous show or one of those podcasts that we all suffer through together. Either way, you can be part of this community now by signing up on secondcaptains.com/join. Or just hang on and see what happens tonight. I would not judge you. If you're a Monday-only listener and you're going to just hedge your bets, that's fine. You can wait and see what happens and make your decision based on that. We're going to talk today also, Ken, about the possibility of an All-Ireland League.
Yes.
What's this all about?
Well, we're going to be joined in studio by Kieran Lucid, and who's kind of heading this group that has come up with a proposal for, we don't want to say United Ireland League, All Ireland, encompassing clubs both north and south of the invisible border that we've got here.
Brendan Dillon is also going to be with us. He's part of this group. He's a former chairman of the League of Ireland.
Yes. And so, you know, this proposal has obviously been kind of been talked about for a few months, and just we thought we might as well hear a little bit more about the idea and where it's at this stage, because a couple of weeks ago the IFA sort of came out and said nah, we're not too sure about this. So I guess what's the situation there? Who's in favor of it in the north? Who's maybe not so in favor of it? That type of stuff.
That's coming up after the Report on Sport.
Yeah, you said we'd have a reaction to tonight's match tomorrow. How about some reaction to 10 years ago's match right now?
Yeah, I like it.
I was looking back through some of the emails and stuff from 2009, from 18th of November 2009.
It was a heady time, Ken. A lot of people getting pretty excited.
This is how FIFA.com wrote up the decisive incident. 5 minutes later, France skipper Thierry Henry won the match for the hosts when his angled pass amid a goal-mad scramble was met by the head of William Gallas. That's how they put it. And that annoyed a lot of people who were emailing to Off the Ball, the show that we then worked on. A lot of people were angry about that. People were emailing FIFA, were emailing Gillette, were forwarding on the email replies they'd received from Gillette.
Gillette?
Yeah, Gillette. They were saying to us, oh, I can't believe you still accept money from Gillette. It's a disgrace. Don't you know they sponsored Thierry Henry?
Gillette responding Off the Ball and also Thierry Henry simultaneously. Yes. Therefore, we were complicit in Thierry Henry's.
Well, it's like Peter in Canada. Peter in Edmonton. I know I've emailed Gillette North America. I just realized you can't pass this on, given that they sponsor your show. You want to know how deep the rabbit hole goes, Peter?
News Talk 106 Sport. Oh,
he adds, on another note, is this the real Henry Shefflin commenting on Football 365 last night? Scroll down to the sixth comment. I clicked on the link. Unfortunately, this is 10 years ago. The link doesn't work anymore.
I'm going to say probably.
Probably wasn't really Henry Shefflin. My email to Gillette. I'm disappointed by your continued support of Thierry Henry, but more so of your reaction this morning to announce when feelings are still so raw. To remind you of FIFA's fair play code, play fair. Winning is without value if victory has been achieved unfairly or dishonestly. Cheating is easy, but brings no pleasure. Playing fair requires courage and character. It is also more satisfying. It's apparently in FIFA's. I look forward to exploring all of your competitors' products. Peter.
That's going
to
be a very well-shaved man there, Peter. If you see all of Gillette's competitors.
Smooth as an egg in Edmonton.
Shaving seven times a day.
Gillette actually did reply, hello, and thank you for your email. Gillette is aware of the Henry handball incident in the France versus Ireland World Cup qualifier. Thierry Henry has publicly acknowledged that it was a handball. It is not our place to comment on the refereeing in the match. This incident does not affect his relationship with us. Kind regards, Anna. Niall wrote an email to FIFA. I wish to make my voice heard in relation to the appalling incident that took place last night in which the Irish team were cheated out of a place in the next World Cup. Henry claims he told the ref he handled the ball. He didn't make any such claim. If this is true, the ref should be fired. If this is a lie, he should be banned for knowingly lying to an official. I think the way in which FIFA conducted itself is an absolute disgrace. Firstly, in seeding the playoffs, just to make it more difficult for small Irish teams to get through. Then allowing blatant cheating to take place. We may be a small nation, but we are an honourable nation. I feel not only was our team's integrity attacked, but the country as a whole was disrespected. I'm livid with anger towards what happened and what is allowed by so-called big teams. In the past, I had respect for Henry, but in the future, I will cheer heartily for any opposition he faces. I expect a response that satisfies my anger in this incident, says Niall. I don't know if they ever did reply. I don't know
what the reply could possibly be, other than, listen, we're going to announce it in a few minutes, but yes, you are going to the World Cup.
A response.
And thank you for your mail.
That satisfies my anger. Daniel Taylor, incidentally, went out to Sweden to talk to Martin Hansen,
the referee.
This is in the Athletic. And he explains, and I'm not sure I've ever heard this explained before. Someone had emailed into us 10 years ago saying, oh, you know, it's terrible. I spoke to the referee's assessor who was at the game. He said that it went down from an 8.2 to a 6.2 after that decision. His World Cup dreams are probably over as well. This was Martin Hansen. No, he was at the World Cup. I met him there. He was cracking jokes. He was having a great time. Seemed to have got over all the abuse.
Didn't get any games, though. Didn't ref any games.
Well, he's still there. I mean, he got to go to the World Cup after presiding over one of the biggest decisions that ultimately led to the introduction of video refereeing.
Oh, yeah. And even more directly to the officials behind the goal.
Mm. Yes, which was brought in the following year, I think. But he told Daniel Taylor that, you know, he was actually so delighted with himself after the game. He went back and they were all punching there and high-fiving each other and, like, belly barging. You know, referees back in the locker room celebrating, having officiated the game brilliantly. Mm. Which does seem a bit weird to me, given the scenes of the craziness of the Irish players as they protested the decision. Like, it should have been clear something isn't right here.
He claims he just thought that was the usual broken-hearted team lashing out at anyone they can.
Well, I think that shows a certain level of emotional subliteracy. Like, you know, Martin Hansen, a fair man, but perhaps not the most astute man in terms of reading other people's emotions. This wasn't just the regular maybe, I don't know why he thought that was just, oh, well, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
It was a very, very concerted protest by the Irish team, with a lot of very wide eyes and a lot of, I can't believe this is happening. A lot of very good actors, he must have thought. Turns out that he was in no doubt about the decision because he'd seen clearly that William Gallas had headed the ball, not handled it. And this appears the whole thing was that he thought they were protesting about Gallas. And it never occurred to him that it was about Henri. This had somehow never become obvious to him in the whole protest. That he never even doubted it until he was told by someone who came in and said, oh, Jesus, that wasn't great. And he's like, what are you talking about? I saw it. Clearly it was a header. Yeah, about that. Okay, I suppose at least we know what happened.
I saw one of the photographers making a similar point. He says that when you're a photographer, you always look for the next action. That's how you get the action shot, because obviously you can't react to something quickly enough as it's happening necessarily to get the shot away. So they all also went to Gallas, and I think it was just maybe one French photographer something caught. Because if you remember, even the image at home that was being used was a screen grab from the TV that was being circulated. That's what was on the back of all the papers.
There's no photo of it. The photographers didn't catch it.
Mm. That's what I'm saying, yeah. Because they're all looking for the next for the next action, which was Gallas not into the goal.
Yes.
But I mean, the ref should be looking. That's no excuse for the ref. He doesn't have to take a photograph. He should be probably looking at the immediate action.
He was never in any doubt. So it ain't what you don't know that kills you. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so.
Of course, so you're oblivious to all this outrage, Ken.
I missed it, Owen.
I was about 2/3 of the way through Madame Bovary and was looking forward to finishing it. You said in your Irish Times piece today, as the rest of the country was in complete meltdown.
I was like, can I write this? I mean, is this like the most wanky thing that's ever been?
I mean, I'd say top five.
It was a bit much.
It was a bit much.
It was true. I was reading it, and it was very good, and I'd spent a lot of the previous day reading it. I was like, you know when you get into a book and you want to finish it? Like,
yeah, the joy of books. Yeah.
You're not like, oh, God, this is so
dope. I find like when you get like in a really big book and you get to the last 100 pages, then you're really like, it's a rock going downhill then. You have to just like, I'm just finishing it right now. You know, kind of way. When you're like at the end of a seriously big book, you're like, actually, just today's the day. I'm just finishing this. That day happened to be the day after the Thierry Henry handball for you, but that's...
While we were all back in the office, explain this, you were on a train to London?
I missed my flight because I went for a drink after the game. The drinking went really well. Before you know it, it was dawn. I tried to sleep. I shouldn't have done that. It was a mistake. I thought I shouldn't
have tried to sleep. That's a mistake.
I can get a quick hour in before I have to go to the airport.
No.
Yeah. Missed the flight. Had to book another journey via Eurostar. Was reading this book all day. Great book. As well, overall. A little bit, but of course. I really enjoyed it. Then I arrived back and I was kind of still mentally in that world of the book, and suddenly I was expected to care or be angry about Thierry Henry to the same level as all of these madmen who were wandering, such as you.
No, incorrect.
See, this is the thing, right?
Yeah.
This is, you know, one of the great regrets of my journalism career, because we were in a meeting, Simon, Mark, myself, and Owen.
News Talk 106 Sport.
And that guy.
I was in better shape this day we're talking about.
And I was, you know, we were frothing at the mouth. McKevitt was like, listen, this is ridiculous. What are we talking about? Team 33, what are we on about? And we managed to basically twist McDevitt's arm a bit into getting a little outraged. But it was confected.
I was waiting for Kennedy to come back as a voice of reason.
Yeah.
I was pissed off. Everyone was pissed off. Wasn't I on Vincent Brown the night before, Ken?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You were rushed out.
I was looking at, newspapers, Hand of Frog and all that.
Hand of Frog.
Probably in a jacket that was two sizes too big. That seemed to happen when I was on Vincent Brown. I just didn't have my own gear. I was running from radio. Here's a jacket that says 6'3" producer.
I was in Bruxelles pub reporting live for Off the Ball with Paddy Mulligan.
Oh, yeah.
So I saw quite a few tweets today about where were you when Henri had. I was like, I was sitting there with Paddy Mulligan watching the game. Beat that if you can.
So, like, I mean, the sort of emails are coming in. Like, I would like to thank the French public and newspapers for feeling a sense of shame. As an Irishman, I want to thank the British public and broadcasters for getting behind us. However, all this means nothing until someone with influence comes out and apologizes. I want Henri to put his neck out, admit he was wrong, and say sorry. Unfortunately, he seems to be too gutless to do so. Many people have come out in Henri's defense, saying that the handball was simply an instinctive thing to do. But what sort of defense is that? That just says this man's instinct is to cheat. What does that say about his character? Say what you want about the Irish, but our instinct is not to cheat. It is not in our nature, like it is in the nature of the French. Other examples include Anelka's dive last night and Ngog's dive against Birmingham.
Ngog.
Ngog's dive against Birmingham. Do you remember the one? I think Lee Carsley was involved.
I do not remember that, Ken. I can tell you right now.
It was just before.
I barely remember Ngog.
Yeah.
Our instinct is not to cheat. It is not in our nature, like it is in the nature of the French.
These emails are brilliant.
Oh man, some of them
so
are
so well put together.
Some of the emails were racist, when you look at the makeup of the French team, they're effectively immigrants who live their lives by cheating, getting everything for nothing. So Irish people should not be surprised, as these are the same type of people in Ireland who bleed the taxpayer dry and get everything for nothing. Another point is that the majority of French people do not support their team due to the fact that they do not identify with the players. John in Dublin 6. Cheers, John. John in Dublin 6 was ahead of his time.
He was. He was about seven years ahead of his
time. There are John in Dublin 6 is all over the place.
Oh, yeah, my God. It really, it's, you know.
Apologies if you're a John in Dublin 6 who's, you
look,
know, not
who's not this particular John in Dublin 6.
The vast majority of them, of course.
Of Johns in Dublin 6 are not racist.
I even found an email from someone offering me Brendan O'Neill to get Brendan O'Neill on. You know Brendan O'Neill, the spiked guy? He writes the...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every time something happens, he writes the opposite article about...
Yeah.
And he had written an article about this, saying, this is a disgrace. You know, not all us fans of the Irish international team were angry. But at the same time, come on. That type of article. We didn't get him on in the end.
So the point is you arrived back from reading your Madame Bovary book to Murph, Mark, and Simon frothing at the mouth.
Just everyone going mad.
Maybe a few little spittles that they've been, they've tried to...
You were showing preliminary signs of infection.
Preliminary signs. And you came back and said, guys, it's just a handball. Like, it happens all the time in football.
Come on.
We're not getting a replay.
Let's
move on. I'm sure John Delaney will get $5 million out of Sepp Blatter over this down the line at some stage while warning him to stay away from his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Of course. Move on, please.
And on he moved.
On he moved. Look...
But it's not the end of the world.
So that was that. Tonight's game, a lot at stake, Owen. Maybe it will be. Maybe we will qualify with a handball.
Yes,
we could do it because there's no VAR.
That'd be sweet, wouldn't it?
We'd offer a replay straight away, though.
I mean, obviously, in the normal run of events, it would be outrageous. But it's just, I feel like the Danes deserve.
Is there? There's no VAR, is there? There's not.
No.
Okay.
So it's cheats aplenty. Yeah. I mean, that should be mixed team talk. There's no VAR, lads. So try and get away with some seriously dodgy shit.
I have a dream for tonight, and my dream is that Mick McCarthy isn't going to finish tonight by saying, if you'd offered me the chance at the start of the group to be in with a chance of being in a playoff and winning it to get to the Euros, I'd have bitten your hand off. As long as Mick isn't saying that, well, I suppose that does leave open the possibility of a defeat by Denmark. But even if that does happen, we do get to the playoff.
We can lose 5-1 again. That's no problem. We still get into the playoffs.
We can lose 5-1. And the way that it is we're in, and we're going to be in the playoffs, and it's going to be either Wales or Slovakia. I mean, I hope it's not Wales.
Oh, God.
I really do.
That's away from home as well.
Yes.
And because we'd be the lower-ranked team.
We're the lower.
That's in the semi-final.
The only team in our path, we call them paths, path B, that's lower than us is Northern Ireland, but we can't get drawn in the semi-final against Northern Ireland. So it'll probably be Wales or Slovakia. It could be Bosnia. I mean, Jesus. Owen, like what? I've been trying to figure it out. I'm still not really sure. But look, it's like we will get
we
to play against somebody.
We should take the approach that Mick has taken, which is we're not looking beyond tonight. We're going to get the result tonight. Come back to us on the World Service tomorrow when things will have crystallized somewhat.
No, either way, that people keep saying, it's almost harder to get knocked out of this Euros than to actually get into it. But that's not the case. If we don't beat Denmark at home, we're faced with a scenario where we've played two matches, one of which is going to be away, possibly against Wales, Slovakia.
Please, not Wales.
There's a very decent chance it could end up being Wales. So we somehow have to win that and then win a final.
Yeah.
That's not easy. I mean, I'd say it's probably easier just to beat
it's
Denmark.
It's much easier to
home.
Beat Denmark.
Although they haven't lost, they've lost once in 34 games, which is one of the weirder kind of records.
It's like win one game at home or win two games
away.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, we could very easily draw two semifinals and win both of them on penalties.
Yeah.
I still think that's a more likely way to qualify than our chances of beating Denmark.
Would you ever give over?
Well, I mean, we have to actually beat Denmark. I mean, it's not even a draw. I mean, a draw isn't going to do it for us tonight, Ken. We're going to have to beat the Danes.
I don't see
it happening.
It could happen. You know? Could happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there is an infinite, you know, list of possibilities as to how this evening will pan out. One of those possibilities is that we beat Denmark.
I just hope it's not Wales. I mean, did you see the Welsh fans singing to Bale the other day? They were playing Azerbaijan. And they were singing the song, Wales, Gulf, Madrid, Wales, Gulf, Madrid, Wales, Gulf, Madrid. So essentially the order of priorities in Gareth Bale's life. So his love affair with Wales continues unabated. And, you know, I mean, they destroyed us in the Nations League. Obviously, we beat them in the big qualifier the previous year, but Bale wasn't playing, was he? He was in the stands that night. That was the night when Joe Allen had to go off concussed after a few minutes. Yeah, and we had a few things go in our favour that night.
What a goal by James McLean.
Speaking of James McLean, actually, you probably heard this by now, but if not, we might as well play it again. This is from McLean's little press conference last week at Abbottstown. It only came out on Saturday. It had been embargoed till Saturday, though it actually took place a couple of days before that.
Before we start, you don't even think about asking me a question.
Me?
Yeah, you little fucking weasel.
Seriously, yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
We'll talk about it after, you won't we?
Okay.
I don't know if they did talk about it after, I'm not sure. But that was James McLean.
Why was he using such language?
Beginning his press conference by stipulating there would be no questions from a certain quarter. But a journalist with Pundit Arena, who evidently McLean had taken exception to some of his commentary on McLean's performances, which was, as we know, not been very good. Although I suppose, you know, it is James McLean. Of all the players, all the football players in all the world, I'd say he's the most likely to do that. if he feels insulted or slighted by you, he will come back at you. This has been an issue with James McLean throughout his entire career. How many social media accounts has he deleted because of exactly this type of thing? People have a go at him. He has a go back. And then he's reminded of his responsibilities by somebody with whatever team he happens to be with at the time. I don't know. And what do you think? Where do you stand on the rights and wrongs of that?
Well, I have no idea because I don't know what exactly he's given out about. I wouldn't say in general it's great practice to be calling any other human being weasels.
A little fucking weasel.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And I think some of the tweets that McLean had in mind have been deleted. So it's difficult to form an opinion to weigh the evidence, which no longer exists. That's James McLean. Never change. Will he play tonight? I'd say so.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine so. For some reason, that display of determination and, you know, last 5 minutes fitness and running power against Switzerland when he chased down the ball and put it back in the box counts for more than anything. That's just what we're looking for.
Well, how many goals have we scored in this pool? Six, I think.
Was it only six?
I think it is six. And that was the best of them, the most important of them. So, I mean...
Was it the best? I don't know.
Well, it's the most important of them, anyway.
It was important, although hardly more
Big
important
Duffy
than the
Denmark,
one away
yeah.
to Denmark. Yeah, it's of similar importance, I would guess. Nathan Murphy, an interesting statistic about Ireland having 16 different scorers of their last 16 goals. Since Shane Duffy scored the goal... And this is the goal against Denmark in the 5-1. Mm-hmm. Ireland have scored 16 goals by 16 different players. Robinson, Maguire, Williams, D, Collins, Long, Brown, McGoldrick, own goal. Brady, Duffy, Harahan, Hendrick, O'Brien, Williams, S, Judge, and Burke.
So we like to spread around the goal score.
Goal communism. everyone is just chipping in. Everyone's chipping in with a small amount. And when together we're amassing up a pretty impressive store of goals.
Yeah. To unleash on the Danes tonight.
So you never know where the attack is going to come from with this Ireland team. We'll see how that goes. But look, we've already kind of spoken about the team as we expect it to be. You know, I think it'll be the usual.
Well, that was on the World Service, maybe for throw a bone to our Monday only.
Randolph, Doherty, Egan, Duffy,
Stevens,
Stevens, Whelan, Hendrick.
This is the. It's who else is going to be in that mid?
McGoldrick up front, McLean on the left, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying this is the team I'd pick. I'm saying this is the team I think McCarthy will pick.
So the ones that people are debating are that other right central midfield role and then the right side attacking
role. Of the attack, yeah. So you would expect that, you know, the kind of obvious choice for Mick to make, I think, for the right side will be Callum Robinson.
Yeah, he's very good against New Zealand.
Yes, because he played well against New Zealand, because he's already picked him there in several matches, and because, well, Odaoda, who he could pick there, I guess, is not in the squad. Mm. He's been left out of the 23. And Robinson, although McCarthy said he thinks he's actually better on the other side, he has played him there on a couple of occasions, so I think maybe he'll go for that, and then you've essentially got, it looks like a choice between Alan Brown and Harahan, and I think he'll probably say Harahan, but I wouldn't be blown away with surprise if he said Brown. So yeah, that's probably what's going to happen.
Good luck for everyone, and here it goes.
Yemen.
Denmark, Republic of Ireland.
When we look down at the Irish squad, it's not that many names that ring a bell. We have the slight upper hand in these two games.
But I'll tell you something, he went down in my estimation when he said that.
We have the slight upper hand in these two games.
I've never heard so much rubbish in my life. Why do we have to listen to that garbage?
We have not resorted to that.
It's always tough to play any British team.
Can I appeal to the British government to please leave our country?
It's always tough to play any British team.
A lot of things have been said over the last few days. Some of it slanderous.
I mean, I actually was abused by a Dane. Abused by a Dane as well the night before.
Come on, Ken.
Is there a Wi-Fi?
Actually, we're just on the 3G.
Before we could finish explaining we weren't actually on the Wi-Fi, he goes, Wi-Fi wankers! You're all Wi-Fi wankers.
In the second game in Ireland, they wanted to go forward, but of course they knew what happened when they went forward, so that's probably why they're too scared to go forward.
You cheeky bastard.
No respect, no honor.
They're too scared to go forward.
You put hard times on this country, you don't know what hard times are, daddy.
Well, I can say it's at least €100,000 in cash.
Our computer is telling us that they go to Group D.
I'm having a balls flounder now. Anyone wants to knock, give me a shell.
Got a chance for revenge, haven't I?
Every game is obviously tough, so...
Boring.
First, I thought you cheeky bollocks, to be quite honest.
They're like polished wood, these seats. I sat in them. I had my beer in my hand, and then I was reaching for my friends. I had a bottle of wine.
Declan Rice.
The young fella makes me so angry.
There's an old saying, he's as bold as a pig.
I hate them. Not the country. Yeah.
No, I hate Denmark, the country.
I would be lying if I said I was looking forward to it.
All right, Kieran Lucid is here with Brendan Dillon, former chairman of the League of Ireland, to talk about their ambitious idea for an all-Ireland league. Guys, thanks very much for making it in, first of all.
Good to be here.
I know that there are other matters on the agenda later on tonight, so we appreciate you taking a bit of time. Listen, the plan was floated, first of all, during the summer for this, but we haven't really had a proper sit-down chat yet with you about this, Kieran. So can you just set out what your plan is, the basics of the plan, and what sort of progress has been made so far?
Well, I guess overall the plan is to have all-Ireland football restructured on an all-Ireland basis, just to provide bigger population centres and, I guess, more bigger games and hopefully bring back some rivalries that you saw glimpses of in the St Anta Cup and even before that. So where we are at the moment is, I guess, the IFA have spoken recently of their opposition to the idea, and that obviously has changed things a little bit. Mm-hmm. But broadly speaking, this started in late 2017, and this has been a long process, but of consultation with clubs. And what we arrived at was something similar to the Danish Super League in terms of a 14 club top tier, and then a regionalised championship below that. But on advice about 2 months ago or so, we engaged the a third party sports consultancy called Hypercube, a Dutch firm. Mm. And their advice was you probably shouldn't tie yourselves to one model or one formula. You should broaden the discussion so that, you know, you can involve other stakeholders like fans, supporters, or fans, players, coaches, etc. And then engage in a kind of a process so that you come up with the best model, because we obviously, despite our best intents, mightn't have all the obviously don't have all the answers. So.
Yeah, when the IFA said, when you said that they were they opposed to the specific idea earlier on? Are they just opposed to any All Ireland League that you're going to bring to the table now that you're trying to broaden it out?
So they had only seen that specific original Danish proposal, mm. Danish-esque proposal, and on the night of we the clubs North and South met in Dundalk on the 24th of October. Yeah. And on the same night, I'm told that the IFA board met that night and decided to come out against what they'd been shown so far, which was the Danish style league. So, yes, I think, as far as I know, they've only seen that original one structure.
So, but would you be confident that, because I suppose, I don't mean to start this on a negative tone, there's a lot of merit in the idea of an All-Ireland League, but if one of the associations might be vehemently opposed to it, is there any point in everybody wasting their time and resources and having all these think tanks, etc., if it's not going to be sanctioned?
I definitely think there's value in it. After Dundalk, the clubs, even the Northern clubs, said, this is very interesting. We wish to remain involved. I think the process of consultation will show the clubs North and South the potential that exists there for...
So you can persuade... You think you can persuade the IFA ultimately if the idea is good enough and the clubs are behind it?
Yes, like we are merely, how would you say, voices in the ear of the clubs. We, for all intents and purposes, we don't really exist. We're just advocates for an idea. So if we're counting on convincing the clubs that this is the way forward.
Why do we need to get Northern Ireland involved in this at all?
The aim, in my view, would be to create an industry which doesn't exist at the moment for professional footballers in this country. We still, and both the associations, North and South, are still sending young kids over to England 20 years really after the English clubs aren't interested in developing them. And so what we need to do is try and create an industry here which will attract bigger money, attract greater sponsorship, attract greater TV coverage, and will encourage young kids to actually want to have a professional career in this country. And that if they do go to England at 21 or 22, that A, substantial money will come into the football industry here, which is not happening at the moment, but only the best players will go, and that the rest who are going to England now and not getting a career will actually have a very successful professional career in Ireland.
Now That all sounds good. Yeah. That all sounds good, but it strikes me you could say all the same things about a kind of a 26-county League of Ireland.
Because it's called the League of Ireland, and I'm sorry, but unfortunately no kid nowadays dreams of playing professional football in the League of Ireland.
Is that not just a branding issue, though? Then it could be relaunched. I mean, what I'm wondering is, what extra sort of critical mass does adding Northern Ireland bring to this? Like, how does it sort of transform the financial outlook or the potential attractiveness of this league?
I don't think an All Ireland League is a means in and of itself. I think it could be. It's one of many things that need to happen, I think, to put the league on a sound footing. The other is serious government investment. So after Hillsborough and Lord Justice Taylor report, the British government started to take safety and standards and grounds pretty seriously, and that came slightly before the Premier League era. And that really, I think, put English football on a sound footing. So I think outside of the All Ireland League, I think that needs to happen anyway in the 26 counties. As for Northern Ireland, what does it bring? I think running a league in the Republic at the moment is a uniquely difficult task in Western Europe in sport, because you have this incredibly successful indigenous product in the GAA. You have, you know, our rugby team is apart from the recent problems, but it's very successful generally, and you can just walk around, you see the amazing success it has become. So, but running a League of Ireland football club is, you know, there's negligible prize money, €120,000 even for the winners. Especially if you're a regional club, you have overnights. It's extremely difficult, and you're living under the shadow of this relentless, ceaseless, sophisticated product in the Premier League. And so to try and combat that and try and repatriate some of the interest in football to our domestic game is an unbelievably difficult task. And Northern Ireland is just one part of that. And they have the exact same issues as us, and as our meeting in Dundalk showed, they're up for this. They this project started in Northern Ireland. It wasn't a Republic angle. It was me living there, and that's how I got to speaking to the clubs. And I was surprised by their interest in this. They're like, it was purely driven by financials, all the same fundamentals as you hear clubs down here speaking of. And since I was living there, it just seemed something, okay, well, why don't we explore this? So yeah.
Would they be confident they can be competitive on the field? And there's off the field stuff as well. But I don't know if you guys watched the Linfield Dundalk game recently with a side sinking feeling. You know, a 6-0 scoreline probably wouldn't have been ideal.
No, I would say it wasn't ideal. It's a funny one. Like, obviously, Linfield got further than any Southern club this year, and they did very well against Carabag, home and away. And I think they were missing Shane Lavery in the Dundalk game. So, but no, 6-0, it definitely tells a story, and I don't know if that's a large enough sample size for. But I think that their coefficient is definitely lower. You can't get away from that. I do think there's a bit of a two-track system in the north, in that you have a few clubs who are kind of moving away a little bit from the pack. They're moving towards full-time professionalism. Kind of, you have a bit of that down here as well. I would be confident because of the fact that we have reasonably short-term contracts. There's not a large inbuilt difference, that those standards would equalize pretty quickly, and it would then come down to population sizes and just general interest.
You're nodding along, Brennan.
I think if you look at the Setanta Cup, I think certainly the League of Ireland clubs tended to do better, but not massively better. It wasn't. You were certainly weren't seeing 6-0s. And I think there will be a standard, a levelling off. I think you may have lesser, very strong teams up north. And I suppose long term, you'd hope that you get away from the north-south, that this is truly an all-Ireland league, and it doesn't hugely matter. Of course, in the early years, the optics will be very important. But the very fact that the Irish league clubs, and so many of them are so up for this, actually shows they want to increase their standards. They want to compete at a better level, and they don't really seem to have been able to do that in the Irish league. And I think both north and south clubs realise that the real money in football is in Europe now, and it always has been, but to a large extent has been ignored. And there's no guarantees with this, and Ken, in answer to your question, there are no guarantees. It is, as Kieran said, hopefully a means to an end, a dynamic, but ultimately that's where the huge opportunities are for Irish clubs to really go where Irish clubs haven't gone before, into Europe, and start creating a real industry and money coming into this country. And you can throw out all the statistics. I was doing a piece on Saturday with a fans forum, and I remember as a relatively young guy going to see Shamrock Rovers play Apoel Nicosia, who's around 1980 or so, and they beat them 7-0 in aggregate. And Cyprus, in the meantime, have had a team into the Champions League on two occasions. So we've got left behind, despite making modest improvements north and south, but we've been left behind European-wise. We've got to do something about it.
I'm interested in the fact that both of you, so far, when you're describing it, you're describing the economic opportunities, financial opportunities, which are clear. Rationally, this makes sense. And you say that the clubs are for it. But so who's against it? Because it's not happening yet. So when you look at the situation, first of all, in Northern Ireland, if the clubs are saying, yeah, this looks like it could work, why is it not happening?
Well, obviously the IFA have come out against it and made their position public. I think it's difficult for an independent group like us, an upstart like me, to waltz in and start lecturing any association. No association is going to like that, outsiders coming in and telling them how to run their business. And so that's always been a consideration, a worry of mine, of ours. And I guess we deliberately kept this project very low key because we wanted to do it quietly, bring them along, and obviously try to win them around to the merits of the idea. And it was actually, I think it was on a podcast, Noel Mooney mentioned me and our group. And since then, it's kind of changed a little, probably for the better. It did us some good to be public, but the IFA, I've always, even since the first meeting, have been very cool in the idea, and definitely that's a headwind, I would say.
I know you were saying in your question there, Ken, that the financial opportunities are obvious, but maybe my brain isn't functioning correctly here. Why, if the league in the north isn't a big money spinner and the league in the south isn't a big money spinner, how is an all-Ireland league going to suddenly generate a load of revenue and be able to wash its own face?
I would say that the All-Ireland League is one part of it. I think government investment, and for the record, I think the Southern League can definitely move along by itself if there is, like, as you saw in 2016, Dundalk did make the Europa League group stages. It's not beyond the realms of possibility. But I do think that an All-Ireland League adds something else. It's a new story. It's larger populations, sizes, large critical mass. You saw in the Sedanta Cup, likes of Glentoran, Linfield, they do travel pretty well. So I think football really at the end of the day is about towns and cities. And you need larger population sizes to grow that industry. And I think if you look at Denmark, which is fitting given tonight's game, that they have 1 million less people than the Island of Ireland, but their TV deal is in excess of €50 million.
But how do you do that? Because
just incidentally on the specific issue of the Denmark, and sorry for interrupting on, but who's paying the €50 million for that? Because in our situation here, state television or the, you know, do we say state TV 14?
Semi-state body, is that right?
Public television is making massive cutbacks. The pay TV channels, you hear, say, for instance, the GAA complaining about the tiny audiences for, you know, and that's for like the biggest pay TV channel, right, on Sky. I mean, it seems like the choice is between either, I mean, I just don't understand where the money's coming from for a big TV deal in this situation. And I was wondering who's actually stumbling up the €50 million a year in Denmark.
Well, in Denmark, I think it's a function of pretty fortunate and unique market dynamics. And I think broadband carriers use it as a kind of a loss leader, which you see in many countries. But here in Ireland, I think, well, football, you know, especially with summer football, I think it's an attractive proposition from the broadcasters we've spoken to. Definitely the All-Ireland story is something new and interesting to them. I think in the north as well, you have, whether it's Windsor Park or even the Oval, which is, you know, definitely in need of some attention, but these are bigger stadia as well. And I think, you know, that's all good for a league. So the discussions we've had with broadcasters, the interest is genuine, the interest is significant, I would say. It's not going to rival Danish figures, absolutely not. But I think it's always a worthwhile exercise to compare your league to ones that do it really well and try and close the gap.
Mm. When you say you were putting it to the northern clubs as kind of make essentially a business case,
yeah.
Did you take in other questions into account? I mean, the fact is that this is like one of the main. It's maybe the main sort of cultural vehicle for the expression of identity.
I think the national side is. I think club football is not about countries. It's about towns and cities. So, you know, you're not asking Linfield to play with Shamrock Rovers. You're asking them to play against them. So I think it's, I think that's why I think that the league could happen rather than obviously a national team is completely out of the question.
But from the point of view of, say, some hypothetical figure in the IFA, would they be looking at this going, here we have another attempt to absorb us into this is the thing we've been warning you about for a century. You know, I mean, that's the fact is, like, no, there's a lot of irrational things about Northern Ireland. It doesn't make sense on almost any level, but it exists. It doesn't make sense on any rational level. There's an irrational case for it, which is the preference of a lot of people who live in Northern Ireland. They do not want to be part of the same entity as the South. And this is kind of saying that to them. How about being part of the same entity? There's a kind of a cultural. I'm not saying it makes sense, but I do think it exists. A kind of a sense of, let's say, no to that type of idea.
I think, having lived there, that they're pragmatic people for the most part, and you know, Tourism Ireland is an All-Ireland entity where it makes sense economically. I think they listen to reason, and I think as long as it's sacrosanct, their national independence, their national sides and associations, the league is something. Some cross-border competition that they've already shown they're interested in. So it's growing the market. I don't see that. I think it's like, I can't say what exactly drove the IFA's decision. I'm sure that there's an element of that, but I think my suspicion would be more that it was just some upstart coming in telling us how to run our football and we better put him in his place. I would say that was more of that.
And certainly on... So the 24th of October was the first time that we had addressed, Kieran particularly, had addressed the Irish League clubs. It was the first we had addressed the League of Ireland clubs a couple of months earlier. And without trying to overstate it, there enthusiasm was actually really striking. In fact, one of the most striking comments was, I think, as the chairman of Ballinamard, who is the vice chairman, I think, but he was saying, what do I tell the championship clubs who are not going to be included in this? Which was quite an interesting observation. So we didn't really get any sense that, no, we're not interested in going down south to play our games. And indeed, if you look at the some of the videos that Kieran's put together from a lot of the supporters, and they're talking about their experiences in the St Anta Cup and Glentoran supporters talking about going down to Cork and the final St Anta Cup, and they brought 3,000 people down. So most of their experiences seem to be positive. Of course, there's going to be negative views, and we just hope that the positivity far outweighs the potential negativity, which you can't disregard either.
What about on the southern side? Like, I mean, one of the things that's always been said whenever ideas of this nature have been discussed, whether it be the national team or, you know, leagues and so on, is you're never going to get the FAI and the IFA voting for this because suddenly there's no need for one of them. I mean, that's not really the case, I suppose, here, but I do wonder what has been the level of enthusiasm from the FAI for the idea. The former chief executive did describe the league as a difficult child. Sounded like he wouldn't have minded someone taking it off his hands. But he's gone now. So how are they feeling about this?
Well, I think to their credit, they invited us in July to speak to the clubs, all 20 of them in Abbottstown. So I think that was a kind of a shift in terms of openness and willingness to engage in outside ideas. I think the FAI, you know, Noel Mooney has said publicly that he's open to the idea. In terms of the problem child reference, I think, broadly speaking, an association has three remits, as you know, the grassroots, the National League, and then the national side. And I think the National League it should be the golden child, really, because it's the lifeblood of the game. And it's where, I think, as Dundalk showed in 26, Dundalk really, for me, was I wouldn't say it was what got me into this, but it definitely caught everyone's interest, I'm sure yours as well, because of the, you know, they were just shy of 7 million in revenues. And now they've dropped back down to whatever it is, just over 1 million probably, because of, you know, their weak contract security. They're in this spiral that they can't get out of. And I think, you know, Irish clubs don't, North and South, don't get compensated like other leagues do for their players, because, you know, the English clubs know they can wait and wait out the contracts and just poach people. And to use Dundalk's phrase, after 2016, they didn't get so much as a bag of footballs for some of these players. So they're caught in that kind of trap. And I think the All-In League, as a broad project, I think it's about breaking that cycle and getting more of a virtuous cycle going, where they have the financial security to hold on to players, and then they can go further in Europe. Like, the opportunity cost of not getting into the group stages is huge. And I think when you're speaking to government, obviously they're going to have to do a hard-nosed calculation, is will we get a return on investment here? But I think in this unique case where there's a river of European money flowing around that we're not tapping into, I think a strong case could be made.
You've both talked a lot about European football. So not just that this league should be strong in its own right and have good games between all the teams in the island, but also that it should help us go further in Europe. But there is the obvious question about how those European places get divvied up. I don't know if there's any solution to this, but surely there are just going to be less European places available for the totality of teams on the island.
Maybe we've got an extra competition now, though, as well.
The honest answer is we don't know. And you were asking earlier about, you know, how does this happen? Obviously, we've got to get the associations on board, because we need the associations to approach UEFA and for UEFA to be sanctioned, because this hasn't been done before. There are positive soundings that this would be a good model. So back to the European places, that would be a negotiation we'd have to have with UEFA. And Kieran, in all his discussions with the clubs, has been very open and said, look, this is not, we're not saying that we have this sorted, by all means, no, but what the other side we're saying is that if the money that we hope will be available is available, it will certainly more than compensate for the lack of European money. But we would certainly be trying to negotiate that there should be two Champions League places, and there is a third, Kenneth, you mentioned, a third tier competition coming in.
Yeah. And one thing I would add to that is that, again, one of the things that Hypercube brought to it is to broaden the discussion, so that there are many different ways to bring about cross-border competition. You could do another, what we would call a fourth competition, a standalone competition like the St Anta Cup. You could have a split season approach where you play home and away in the leagues as they are, and then move to an All-Ireland League in the latter half. And the halfway point, the UEFA places are sorted. And then there is the whole hog Danish style model. And that obviously would set a precedent in terms of men's football, at least.
That's the idea, right? I mean, what you're talking about, I know you said that you're open-minded as to exactly how it would work, how many games there might be, how often teams play each other. But what you want is the current league structures to be finished with in both countries at the top level and everyone to play each other in a league. Is that the ideal? As opposed to, because there have been, I mean, there was the United Union Cup there last week. There have been loads of iterations of that. But are you talking about that if I'm Shamrock Rovers supporter, my team is in this All-Ireland League. That's what I play in as the bread and butter competition.
That's certainly the ideal that I and we started out with. And I think you could, in terms of those broadly, those three options, you could rate them all in terms of what they call UEFA access to UEFA places, commercial attractiveness to broadcasters, sponsors, and fan interest. And fan in the north, I would say there is an attachment to what they call the Irish League. Ironically, it's no longer called the Irish League, but so it may be a split season, might be more politically achievable. But I have to be fully transparent and say yes, the full All Ireland League would be my preference.
Yeah. You're the same. It would be very much the group's preference. We would see that as the one that's most likely to attract sponsors.
That's the most exciting one. It would be the TV thing that's new and all the rest of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. How achievable it is, well, I suppose you'll find out soon enough. Can I ask you, though, a more basic question, Kieran? What is your motivation here? Because I read when you were launching it that you're not in it for the money, as in you're not going to take a penny out of it, and also that you're not a massive League of Ireland man or anything, that it's not it's not your abiding passion in life. So why are you doing this?
Well, the Dublin GAA team have obviously after five in a row now, so as a Kerryman, I want to do everything I can to get them off Gaelic football back onto the soccer. And I'd like to thank the Kerry County Board for their non-joke. No, really, it's just a love of the game. And I was living in Northern Ireland, that, simple as that. And I'd sold a very small company I had, so I had the time, kind of the independence to spend what it is now 2 years, you know, burning a lot of rubber, shoe leather, and drinking a lot of coffee with these clubs and getting to know them. I think it should happen. I really do. I think you'll see more consolidation of smaller leagues into larger ones. That would be my prediction. You've 55 member nations in UEFA now, and I think that kind of balkanization, as it were, of Eastern Europe means that it's, you know, you have the big leagues and then you have the smaller ones, and it's very hard for them to compete. So I think it would make sense. We have decent infrastructure on the island now as well, so that the travel times are not as much as they were. So to answer your question, it's just a labour of love, and absolutely not. We're an altruistic group, and obviously Brendan here, but Brian Kerr and Alex Horn, who ran the FA in England for many years, they've come on board because they agree that it would be a brilliant initiative.
Well, why did you come on board, Brendan? Why are you?
Very interesting. So, this was attempted about 10 years ago, but never really got off the ground. And I was sort of involved in the background. And when I got the phone call, I just said, you know what? Suppose I, as you know, was chairman of the league. It was a really exciting time. It was when we moved to summer football. I've been involved in UCD. And I suppose I'd say one thing, my involvement in UCD would lead me to believe that actually anything is possible, because UCD, 40 years after the first scholarship was granted, are still bringing young players through and competing at the highest level. And nobody would have felt that was possible at a professional level. I just think that professional football is so undersold. It is the both associations with the franchise for the world's most popular game. This is not some, you know, minority sport we're talking about. This is the world's most popular game. Some of the data that Kieran has produced, there's an economic deficit of 250 million money that goes out of the country. There's more Liverpool jerseys sold in Dublin than there are in Liverpool. And the same for Manchester United and Aston Villa. It's crazy. We love our football. We just need a league that people will love. So I'm just so excited about it. I just think, you know, it looks as though it'll take a bit longer than we might have.
Well, 2021 was initially what you were talking about, wasn't it? Which seemed a tad ambitious,
you know,
I must say.
Who knows? We can't dictate that timeline, because it will take the time to get everybody on board. But certainly the IFA statement is not sufficiently negative for us to go away. We are still really enthusiastic. And the reaction of the club since that statement, North and South, has been fantastic. So, look, we think it would be really fantastic to be part of. And we really believe in it and believe that it would be the dynamic. And ultimately, I suppose, for me, it's the vision that young players say, I want to play professional football in the All-Ireland League, and that we stop the drain of all these kids going to England and coming back with their dreams crushed. And not just that, but that Irish clubs playing in Europe at a high level and just maximising the potential that is in Irish football.
Yeah, I think everyone can agree on those sentiments. Kieran Lucid, Brendan Dillon, thank you so much for explaining all that to us, and best of luck with it.
Thank you.
We want you, Shane.
Who's everyone's match-winning hero tonight?
Shane Duffy, 2 goals.
2 goals, Salvo.
2 goals and a tragic red card that rules him out of the group stage of the World Cup.
16 players there into the danger zone. Chance maybe, yes!
You go home to your mother and your father and grow up to be strong.
Determination etched all over that as he stretched for it to put it home. And Ireland lead 1-0. And now we've 85 minutes to sit at the edge of our seats. This happened before and we know what can happen. Now it's up to them.
Oh, we're getting ready for Russia. Good luck.
Yeah, with all the goal communism spoken of earlier on, I think we all know it's up to big Shane Duffy. It's up to the big man. Whether it's from his centre-half berth or when he's thrown up front with the 20 minutes, half an hour to go, it's up to Shane Duffy.
He's not going to get thrown up front with half an hour to go.
Oh, well, 20 minutes. You don't think?
10 minutes.
It's the most obvious trick in the book, and we don't tend to turn up our noses at obvious tricks.
Give horses in the mouth.
I think I might leave the last word to Damien Delaney we had on the show on Friday. Just if you're walking towards Lands End Road, as you listen to this show, this Welcome to Hell style prediction should have you bouncing into the stadium.
What I expect in that is Mick McCarthy team, solid 0-0, you know, keeping the game really, really tight, 1-1 potentially, and then, you know, hopefully we can nick it later on or get a refereeing decision.
A refereeing decision. It really does feel, particularly with the day that's in it and the Henri anniversary, that we're hedging a lot of bets or sort of staking a lot of our hopes on the referee to just let one slip through and VAR not around to correct him. Come on, referee. Have a bad day.
Oh, God. Owen, I love your positivity. I love where you're coming from. And, you know, it's just what I needed. I needed to hear some positivity because, you know, I haven't been bit by fever. You know, by Euro 2020 fever yet.
Yeah, well,
but today is long.
No, it's long. It's nice outside. It's cold. It's crisp. Hopefully the weather. Why am I talking about the weather? You know, the Danes don't like it. They won't know what hit them with this cold, wintry Irish day. Tell you that for nothing. Better stop talking. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks,
Owen.
Enjoy the game. Result
Owen,
dependent.
I like you. And I like your style.
Thanks, Murat. We will talk to you on the World Service tomorrow. Football show, Ireland Denmark Reaction Podcast.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home. They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.